Back to My Garden, episode 88.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here's Dave Ledoux.
It's finally here. 99 remarkably clever gardening ideas that you can use immediately. It's a free report you get instant access. It's an epic list of tips, hacks, and gardening shortcuts just for you. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/clever. Are you concerned about toxic chemicals, GMOs, and frankenfood? Don't panic. Grow organic. Discover my new resource for organic gardeners. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/myorganic. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you listen to this. I'm Dave Ledoux, and welcome to another edition of Back to My Garden. And we have a very unique guest in the studio today, folks. We're going all the way to the west coast of Canada. Melanie loves growing food in a short season. She's passionate about sustainable, organic, cold climate gardening. Like vegetables that mature in under 60 days or less, and perennials that survive in minus 40. Melanie is a master gardener, an avid blogger, an author about a gardening book called Growing Food in a Short Season, Sustainable Organic Cold Climate Gardening, and she lives in northern British Columbia. We have a lot to talk about. Please welcome from Prince George, BC, Melanie J. Watts. Hi, Melanie. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dave.
I'm excited that you're here. I gave you a very brief introduction. I want to get to know you a little better, and our listeners want to hear your story as well. Melanie, take a minute or two, just relax, settle in. Tell us a little bit about your background and how did you get into gardening?
I think ever since I was a little girl, I've been dreaming about moving to the country and growing my own food. You know, chickens and maybe a milk cow, and definitely growing some food plants. I've been reading a lot of books about this. It was just some kind of a dream I wanted to do. So eventually, back in the early 80s, we bought some land northeast of Dawson Creek, which is even colder than where I live now. And I knew nothing about gardening. Nobody in my family gardens, knew absolutely nothing, have no practical experience. So I just read a lot of books, and Harrowsmith magazine was a big help. And another book by Jennifer Bennett, called Northern Gardening, I think. And I just did everything that she told me to do, and it turned out great. We were actually lucky because the house we bought came with a huge garden that the previous owners had been growing food in for 10 years. So the soil was already built up, and anybody could put a seed in there and grow fabulous stuff. And that's what happened. I just planted some seeds, and everything just grew.
Wow, wow, wow. So you inherited a big garden when you moved in, and you were an absolute beginner.
Totally. Although we don't live in that house anymore, we have a different place now, but yes.
Now, for those of you listening, we're going to talk about gardening for the next half hour. I'm going to have all the links up on the website at Back to My Garden. Make sure you check out Melanie. She has an amazing blog at www.northerngardenersalmanac.com. And her Twitter handle is Caffinara, CaffinaRa. I'll have Mel's links up on the site, though. But the book, make sure you go to Amazon. Search Melanie J. Watts, Growing Food in a Short Season, Sustainable Organic Cold Climate Gardening. That title basically says it all, doesn't it? That's what we're going to talk about today. By the way, for my American listeners, Melanie and I are in Canada. Minus 40 Celsius and minus 40 Fahrenheit are almost the same. That's about as cold as it gets. So when we talk about cold climate, we mean cold climate. Do you know what zone you're in, Melanie?
Zone 3. The book is written for zone 2 and zone 3 and probably zone 1.
Zone 1.
Although the amount, Pardon?
Zone 1 and 2, that must just be rough.
Well, it doesn't really have anything to do with the cold. It's got more to do with the length of the growing season. And being so far north, the days are very, very long. And so you get more hours of sunlight every day. So that sort of compensates for the short growing season.
Right. So June 21st, the longest day of the year, is very long when we're up north.
That's right. Yes.
I was reading on your blog where you talk about your spring planning. You start a lot of seedlings. Can we maybe start our conversation there? As spring is coming, what's on your mind as a gardener? What are you kind of planning to get planned?
I'm thinking actually of getting together with my daughter and maybe ordering some seeds right now. It's way too early to start planting anything.
Right, yes. There's 2 feet of snow on the ground. Do you have a favorite seed company?
I tend to patronize the small Canadian seed companies. I actually have a list of those on my blog under resources. Okay. Or I try and buy them locally. And I try and I get open pollinated seeds so I can collect them. It doesn't always work out. Sometimes the plant dies before I can get the ripe seeds from it, or the frost comes along and kills it. So it's difficult, but I'm experimenting. That's basically what I'm doing right now.
Oh, I love it. I love the word experiment in the garden. You're a master gardener. You're a writer. You're a blogger. You're helping a lot of other gardeners. What was your garden like last season? Did you have a good summer?
It was very hot, much hotter than usual. And I grow my tomatoes and peppers in a greenhouse. And it was just too hot in there for the tomato. The flowers were dying. And I'm just not used to it being too hot. So, this year I'm going to take the roof off the greenhouse in July. That July is the hottest part of time of the year. The flowers don't die. I don't know if I'll put it on at night. I guess I'll just have to be vigilant and just pay attention to the weather and decide what to do, if it's how cold it's going to get. Because it does cool down at night. I mean, it might be, 30 degrees during the day in the sunlight, but at night it could go down to below 10 degrees, even in July.
The last couple Augusts, if you go east from you quite a bit, my parents live in Alberta, and they always seem to get a little bit of snow in late August that completely ruins the garden. And then September's hot and beautiful. You don't get that kind of weather, though, where you are, do you?
Well, we don't get snow. We usually get frost, and it's because I'm in Zone 3. The frost usually happens sometime in September. And last year, we did get a severe frost around the first week of September, killed off all the tender vegetables. You can sort of help to protect the plants by covering them with a cloth, a row cloth, or something like that. But it doesn't always work, because if the frost is, severe, it's not going, you can cover them, whatever, it's going to die anyway. But, that's what you have to contend with. And that basically puts an end to the garden, because even the hardy things slow down after that, because it's the amount of daylight is diminishing anyway. And even though the days might be beautiful and sunny and it might be 25 degrees at the hottest part of the day, at night it could be getting down close to zero or maybe below zero every night. So, gardening's basically over then.
So your greenhouse was too hot, your tomatoes were unhappy. What brought you the most joy last summer in your garden? Did anything really make you happy?
Last year, I don't know, it was just a normal year. I guess the best part was collecting peas. The peas grew really fast and they matured because it was so hot. So I was able to collect lots of pea seeds. And then I tried an experiment, and I planted them, I guess, in late October before the ground froze, because I also planted the potatoes. So that just to say that, well, I know the potatoes are going to survive the winter, because I often leave potatoes in the ground and then harvest them again in the spring in May when the ground unfreezes. Just, you know, fresh potatoes and also carrots too. But this time I thought, well, if I just plant them, then I don't have to plant them next spring. And if I plant the peas, I have heard rumors that pea seeds survive. So I thought, well, I'll just try it, you know. I'm not going to, you know, it's only a few bucks. And in my case, it didn't cost me anything because I harvested them for my plants. So we'll see. That's the exciting thing, I guess, I did last year.
You planted your pea seeds in October.
Yes.
I just wrote it down. I'm taking notes for all the listeners, and I have a giant question. So it's going to sit in the
ground. Well, I really hope they grow.
Oh, yeah, okay. So this is an ongoing experiment. This could go horribly wrong.
It could.
Okay, good. Well, I know the carrots and the potatoes. We do parsnips, too, and test sometimes. My parents leave them in Edmonton over the winter at minus 30, and they swear it gets a lot sweeter in the spring when you dig them up.
Oh, I'm sure they do. I'm sure they taste much better.
And you leave potatoes and carrots, so the root vegetables survive the winter underground.
Well, actually, though, it's not 100% true, because they did try beets, and they just disappeared. I don't think beets, I guess. But I guess beets are biennials, but parsley's a biennial, and it survives.
Interesting.
So I don't know.
The beets turned into compost. They just broke down.
Well, they just disappeared. I never even saw them. I never saw them again.
With such a limited growing season, you must really have to be strategic. It's like with tomatoes. Do you have to pick varieties that ripen really quick?
Well, yes and no. I grow tomatoes in pots, and those are usually the indeterminate bush types. Mm-hmm. That are short, you know, 60 days or less. Silvery fir is one. But in the greenhouse helps to extend the season and protects the plants from mild frost, minus 5 or warmer. So I just grow my, you know, 100-day, 120-day tomatoes in there. And I also start those plants indoors under lights. I plant the seeds end of March, beginning of April. And then I move them into the greenhouse sometime in May, depending on how the weather is.
I was just about to ask you, because you have your seedlings in pots in March, like we do. We have the same thing in our basement. I tried to make a little greenhouse, but it blew away last year.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was... You see the old westerns with the tumbleweeds tumbling down an old country street. That was my greenhouse.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it didn't go well. But we have to harden our tomatoes. And we take them out in the morning, and then you leave them progressively longer in late April, early May to harden them. But I never knew about sun scald, because we used to harden them in the shade. And two summer,
oh, but don't you move them? Don't you move them into the sunlight progressively every day to protect them against them?
Let's just say I miscalculated, because I'm still very much an enthusiastic amateur. So my poor tomatoes, I put them out and they were just sunburnt.
Oh no!
Last year we got smarter. We use a floating row cover.
Well, that's a good idea.
And it kind of is like a gauze, and it protects it a little bit, because where we live, get a really hot, dry wind, and it dries them out real. Because you said you grow in container pots. I know our tomatoes in pots dry out faster than in the garden.
Yeah, everything in the pots. But the pots are fairly big. And I usually put mine on the south side of the house on the deck, and you know, at the beginning of May, and then right up against the house to keep them warm. And then I bring them in every night. And then I gradually move them away from the house and out towards the edge of the deck. Otherwise, they get too hot. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'm sure it's 45 degrees on the deck in July.
And just water by hand every day? Is that how you do it?
Yeah, if they need it, or I just stick my finger in the soil. It's the best way to decide if you need to water something, and it's probably better to underwater rather than overwater, even outside.
Because you're so experienced, I want to ask you about mistakes that you see beginners making or questions that they come to you with as a master gardener. You must see the same mistakes over and over again.
I don't think so, really, because where we live, I guess mistakes would be putting things out too early because the weather is really nice and it fools you into thinking that, oh, it's summer now. So you would plan to put all your tender seedlings out in the garden and then a frost comes and kills them off. I guess that's probably the most common.
Guilty.
Yeah, you really do. Even with climate change, you really, you know, we still live at the same latitude and we still have the same amount of sunlight and that's, and, you know, the frost is going to come, even if it comes in September and then you don't get another one till October.
I completely understand. There's always that first sunny day in April when everyone who loves gardening loses their mind and starts it about a month too early.
Yeah. Although you can, though, microclimates are actually very important in a cold garden. You would look at a microclimate, either a natural one or a man-made one, where it's warmer. Like a natural microclimate would be on the south side of a building. It's a lot warmer there. So you could put your tender peppers or squash or tomatoes or basil. You could put those things in a container in a warm place. An example of a man-made microclimate is a greenhouse. Or a row cover is a man-made microclimate.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
You know, and a natural, or even just some rocks that can absorb the heat, and you could just put your plant, your seedlings behind, like in front of the rocks, on the south side of the rocks, I guess, so the sun will warm up the rocks and warm up the area. And, I mean, even in my garden, I have early season perennials that sprout up by the rocks, although by the time July comes along, it just gets too hot. For example, things like perennials like chives and things like that. Chives and sorrel, I guess, are two sort of cold perennials. And they, and if you have them in if you grow them in a place with a microclimate, they'll start growing the minute the snow melts. And you can hardly have to wait to get an early harvest. But by the time July comes again, those plants are probably dead because it's too hot. Because those perennials like cold weather. So when it gets too hot for them, just like northern people, just like us, we live in the north, we just can't take it any longer. We need to find the air conditioning. So you would, in that case, you would probably have two chive plants, one for early season picking and then one out in the garden, you know, where the wind comes and keeps it cool. So you can still harvest chives in July when it's boiling hot.
One of my favorite thing about chives, they get those giant flowers on the tips and the bumblebees just love them.
Oh, that's right, yeah. And they taste good too, and they look pretty in salads.
You're a writer. You have a nice book on Amazon. You have a wonderful blog. I want all the listeners to head over to NorthernGardenersAlmanac.com. What's it been like for you writing about gardening? What was it like writing your book? What do you like best about that?
Well, actually, it was fun. It was also exhausting because it took a long time. And I've also been thinking about, I've been a writer since 1998, a published writer, writing about gardening. And I'd always been thinking about doing this, and probably because it's taken a few years for the genesis of the thought to actually doing the book, it's benefited from all the wisdom that I've accumulated over the years. And it's mostly from reading other books or just by doing, really.
Yeah, by doing it.
Just going out there and doing it is the best way to learn anything.
Let's take a quick minute to thank our sponsors and then come back and play five quick questions. Attention garden lovers. Do you want to save time, save money, and have your most amazing garden ever? Receive free tips, strategies, and gardening techniques from passionate gardeners around the world. Join the VIP club for free today at www.backtomygarden.com/VIP. What's the hottest trend in gardening? I think the hottest trend is aquaponics. Can you really grow a massive garden powered by fish? Find out more and discover the secrets to building fish-powered gardens at www.backtomygarden.com/fish. You know, Melanie, I looked at the clock and the time is flying by. This is the time in the show where we play a game called Five Quick Questions.
Okay.
This is your chance to share your wisdom and experience with novice rookie gardeners. Are you ready to play?
Sure.
Now, I've changed up the questions for 2015 because my dear mom said, why don't you change the questions? So I did. Question number one is a fun one. What is the funniest gardening mistake that you've ever made that you're willing to admit to publicly?
Funniest? I don't know. I guess the thing I can think of is leaving my seedlings on the deck in May and then having a frost come overnight and kill them off. I don't know if that's funny, but that's the only thing I can think of.
That's the most tragic, especially if it's heirloom tomatoes. Plants are resilient, though. Sometimes they come back from the dead, it seems.
Well, yeah, I suppose if it's just the top growth that gets killed off, the roots can still be alive. Although back then, I didn't know that. I think I just threw them all away.
Question number two. Where you live, what's the biggest enemy you have in the garden? Maybe it's a pest or an animal?
Well, my house right now, the most annoying pest, I suppose, are the hares. The native hares that just come along and eat my kale. They love kale. And I've been unable to, because it's a biennial, but last year I was so excited because it was coming back. I could see it growing, and then the next day it was all gone because the hares had just lopped it all off. So and they killed it. So I'm, you know, trying to get all these barriers, put up fences and all kinds of stuff just to deter the hares.
Interesting. And they're fearless. They don't seem to be, the little ones, like the little bunny rabbit ones, they're too dumb to even run away when you come out.
I know. I suppose the other way I could get rid of them is just to get a dog, and that would probably be the end of them, but
I can give you a thumbs up for that, is all four of my neighbors have dogs, and I'm the only one without a dog. And I'm the only one that ever has a rabbit in his garden. It lives under my shed.
Well,
yeah, it does. I love planting sunflowers. And last year, sunflowers were destroyed by rabbits. And then two-thirds of the other half were destroyed by blue jays.
Oh, that's terrible.
I asked my father for gardening advice. He says, I have easy advice for you. Buy a gun. And I said, you can't shoot animals in the town where I live. I go to jail. But
he grew up in a different era. I don't know. You'd have to be a good shot.
Yeah.
If he has a gun, you'd have to have a terrible shot. So
that would imagine how stressed your neighbors would be if you started shooting guns in the garden.
Yeah.
Question number three. If somebody's brand new to gardening, now, everybody should go to your website, northerngardenersalmanac.com. Do you have one or two other good websites that are good resources for novice gardeners?
Actually, I thought about that one, but most of the websites I read are in other countries, and they're not beginner websites.
Oh, well, let's share them too, because we have a lot of intermediate gardeners that listen.
Okay, but they're not even about growing food. one website I like is called faroutflora.com, and it's the people who write it live in San Francisco, and they grow succulents, and that's why I like it. And plus, I like their writing style.
Nice. You must be able to grow a couple of succulents.
We do, actually. I grow sempervivums, which are hens and chicks.
Yeah, hens and chicks.
They're very hardy. And also sedums. There's a huge variety of sedums, and I haven't found one that doesn't survive the winter. Oh, and also, the last time I was in the Okanagan, I bought an Opuntia plant, Opuntia fragilis. It's a cacti that sort of has a round, flat leaf, although I don't know if that one survives here. The fragilis has more of a rounded leaf. And then after I bought the plant, we went walking just in the hills around Oliver in the Okanagan, and it was growing wild, and it was sticking to our shoes, so I got a whole pile more to bring home. And it's hardy, too. And it's actually the native plant of Saskatchewan. So if it can survive there, it can definitely survive anywhere.
You know, Melanie, the listeners are smiling because my Latin is terrible, and the blog is just filled with spelling mistakes of me trying to guess how to spell Puntia fragilis.
Oh, I don't know what the normal name for that would be. Sorry.
I'm going to look it up. It's the flower of Saskatchewan. That's good. I thought that was the crocus. Maybe that's Manitoba.
Oh, that's a prairie crocus. Yeah, those are beautiful plants.
Yeah, so
they've
fragile.
Actually changed the Latin name of that too. Yeah, I have one of those in my garden. Well, when we lived in Dawson Creek, they used to go wild, and we used to go walking along the Peace River in the spring, which is like April, early June up there, just to look at them.
Yeah, they're so fragile and such a beautiful but short season. Yeah, I'm going to look that up. I have to get Google to give me a good flower translator on the Latin, so that's good. So that's far out. Flora.com from San Francisco. I love finding cool websites like that, so thank you for sharing that.
Okay.
Question number four is books. Do you have a favorite gardening book or, you know, the textbook that you always refer to?
I do, actually. The Northern Gardener by Jennifer Bennett was the first book, gardening book about growing food that I ever read, mm-hmm. and it's incredibly helpful. And another book, I have to go upstairs to my library to remember what it's called. I discovered this book a couple of years ago, or 3 years ago probably, and it is called okay, it's called Gaia's Garden. It's by Toby Hemingway. Mm-hmm. It's called Gaia's Garden, A Guide to Home-Scale Permaculture. And it's all about respecting the soil and encouraging wildlife into your garden and growing food without chemicals. And it has huge tips. It's just a wonderful book.
Nice. Thank you for sharing that. I wonder what it was like for Toby in high school with the last name Hemingway if they said, hey, you should be a writer.
Yeah, it's not spelled the same way, though. It's spelled H-E-M-E-N-W-A-Y.
Right. And plus, your book is now on Amazon. Listeners, make sure you search Melanie J. Watts with two T's. I will have the link up on Back to My Garden. Because there's a Melanie Watts from Quebec that writes children's books.
Her name is Melanie Watt, actually.
Watt, okay.
And also my gardening book, if you live anywhere. My book is a great resource for beginners. It tells you how to improve your soil, encourage wildlife into your garden to help to get rid of disease. It also talks about microclimates and tells you how to plant everything. And things that you can make with the food you grow. There's recipes. So it's not just for northern gardens. It's for every gardener, every beginner gardener out there.
One of the things that really resonated with me, Melanie, is on your blog, you talk about eating as part of gardening. And I really love that approach is, you know, grow what you love to eat.
Definitely.
You know, if peanut butter was a vegetable, I wouldn't grow it because I don't like peanut butter. I mean, You should never be bored in the garden, right? There's always something new to discover.
Definitely.
Speaking of discovery, question number five, the last question is a fun one. Is there anything you've never grown that you would love to experiment with next season?
Not really, because things that I want to grow require too long of a season. You know, things like corn, for example, or a really good microclimate. I do have a friend who lives in, I live in the country, and a friend of mine who lives in town, he grows corn in a microclimate between his garage and his house. But, you know, I don't have that warm of a spot to grow it. And so it would just require, I think, too much fuss and bother. So I don't think I'd bother.
Well, let me rephrase question five then. Is if you were only allowed, if you were only allowed to grow one thing, what would you grow?
Tomatoes.
Me too.
Because they taste the best.
My wife grew 22 or 23 heirlooms last year. And I thought,
wow.
You know, we're addicted to tomatoes, but now I'm getting into the hot peppers a lot too.
Yes, I like hot peppers too. I love them. I wish I'd built a bigger greenhouse, actually. It's too small.
Do you grow garlic, Melanie?
I do. And it's very easy to grow. And because the season is so short, you don't always get that huge bulb. So I just leave it in for another year. Just give it that extra time to get bigger.
2-year-old garlic. Wow, that's great. I wonder how that affects the flavor.
I don't know. It tastes just as good as it does any other time. It's definitely one of the easiest things to grow. Just put a clove, just poke it into the soil about the depth of the clove. So a clove is probably, an inch long maybe, so plant it 2 inches deep. And no problem. You just just fertilize it with compost. Put a thick layer of compost around the garlic and just plant it in. I usually plant my garlic, I think, sometime in September. And by next year, about the middle of August, the tops start dying off, and then that's the time to harvest it. But you'll know right away after you've pulled up a couple how big the garlic heads are, and if they're too small, then don't bother to pull the rest, just leave it. So, I mean, I actually have garlic of all stages of life growing in my garden, because if you let it go to flower, you'll get the big flower, and it will have a big seed head on it. And each one of those little bulbs, they're called, you can plant that in the soil, and that'll take 2 or 3 years to mature. So I have some of those planted last year. I have some cloves from a couple of years ago and some more that I'm probably going to be harvesting. So I just have garlic from all stages in my garden.
Oh, I love it. You know, dear listeners, I want you to follow Melanie on Twitter. You can follow her at Caffinara, Caffinara. Make sure you bookmark and share Melanie's resources on her blog at www.northerngardenersalmanac.com. And check out her book on Amazon. It's Growing Food in a Short Season, Sustainable Organic Cold Climate Gardening. The name says it all. It's brilliant. Melanie, the time has kind of flown by. You've been a tremendous guest.
Oh, well, thanks for having me, Dave.
I want to give you the last word to all our listeners around the world today. Can you leave them with either a note of encouragement or a pearl of wisdom?
I would just say just do it. Just plant a seed of something that you like to eat, and it's a lot easier than you think it is. And it's not as much work as you think it's going to be. And I'll definitely appreciate eating your first vegetable that you grew all by yourself.
Tremendous. Oh, and Melanie, we're all sending you good luck with your wild hares and your kale this summer.
Oh, thank you, Dave.
All right. Thank you for being on the show.